Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Off the Ball Daily, a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Kind of learning how to process these sort of things now. Monday wasn't too bad, obviously you're with your teammates and stuff, and then Tuesday kind of hits you.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast,
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
The good.
Is it a perceptive hard to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
You want best start? Chicago. I'm interested in. You were very down. Not cynical, but I'd say
skeptical of what we're going to happen. Yeah, I think we're going to win one game.
Hyper realistic.
Well, sorry. Now that I've seen Australia, now maybe will Australia be better in a couple of weeks' time? Will they get more players back?
They will. They'll have Skelton back. Len Iketau, he'll be available. He wasn't available this weekend. He's with Exeter. Hooper, the back row player, he's with Exeter as well. Very good player. So they'll have probably three of those guys back. We saw in that first test in Australia as well, in Brisbane, that they were a little bit all over the shop. It's not an excuse. I think England were, as I said at the start there, they looked very dangerous at times, and they're if you give them time and space, they're, Suwalee, he's an outstanding centre, you know. They can cut you apart, but there's pressure on Ireland.
How many games are we going to win this November?
It's funny, I said it last November as well. I think if you win the first one, it gives you great momentum. We ended up beating Fiji, Argentina and Australia, and the other three, not good performances, flat, a little bit of spark missing.
You'd say the seeds of what we're seeing now were being sown then, maybe?
I think we might win one this.
It'll be one, and whether or not we beat Australia.
No, I think if you ask me now to say, will we beat Japan? Yes. Will we beat Australia? I think yes. I think we'll have enough to beat them. The South African game is, you know, their power and the quality of player they have and the level they're at the moment. And you think, for them and Rassie Erasmus going to New Zealand and winning that game so convincingly, that's in their kind of muscle memory, their mind as well. He'll really want to win this one in Dublin, Rassie, you know, because they've lost.
Score.
Yeah, a few times there, and that's the one that he will really want to win.
I don't know how to assess this game, right? Because 60 minutes in, things are going relatively well on the scoreboard. And then a couple of mistakes get compounded and the game is gone. That happens to you against New Zealand. It didn't happen to us that much against New Zealand in over the last decade, really. Last year, they just kicked us off the park because we committed loads of penalties and they kicked all of them. And this year, you would say we shot ourselves in the foot, but they were also slightly better. There's a combination of things happening.
Well, their attack is, they have that X factor ability that sometimes it can make a difference in tight games. Lester Fainga-Nuku came off the bench. He made his debut actually against Ireland in that tour in 2022. Then he went on a bit of sabbatical or money-earning journey to France. He's back in New Zealand rugby now and gets picked again. Seriously powerful, explosive athlete. And he goes outside Gary Ringrose, doesn't he, for that first try, if you remember. And it's unlike Gary Ringrose because he's a good defender and he's quick and he's elusive himself, but slips off the tackle, gets the offload to Will Jordan. He makes that line break, quick ruck, couple of passes, and they score in the corner. at that point, Ireland are 10 points up and they're managing the game really well with the red card.
Yeah.
And with Tadhg Bourne being off. And they look like, you know, they're doing a lot of good stuff here. Their simplicity of quick breakdowns, really good clearances out of their defensive zones. They looked robust and just calm and patient in you know, no big negative flow going across the team with the sending off. And that gives New Zealand a lifeline back into the game. And if you fast forward to the second half and Ireland getting that penalty going 13-7 up, I did feel, and I probably said it at half time, that they need another score. Even if it's a penalty, you need, if you can stretch it out to 9 points, it'll give a good feel. And then you try and limit your mistakes. You're like, the reality here is, and I know that the players and the coaches spoke about it all week and probably post-match, that it's not an excuse about the match practice, but it's just a reality. You cannot get away from the fact that you've no games played here. And the last 20 minutes, I think it told. I think Andy said after the game, Andy Farrell, that, you know, he didn't think it was... I don't think it's physical fitness as regards being able to go out and do a hard fitness session and look unfit. I think the players are conditioned really well from the pre-season, but the match stuff is, he's talking about mental sharpness, and it's that tiny little split second of enthusiasm to be able to switch your mind on to make that clean out or get into position to make the tackle or have that communication under fatigue. And I think that did tell in the end. And I could tell you this before the game, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. If you give a team like New Zealand, no matter what stage or how good you think they are, go back to 2011 team, 2015 team, like, they were phenomenal World Cup winning sides. They'll exploit space, mistakes. And I looked at even the third try. Beauden Barrett and Damien McKenzie. If they see they're brilliant at seeing a little gap, reacting to each other, Gary Ringrose comes out of the line. And sometimes he gets that right. A lot of the time he gets it right, but he got it wrong at that point.
It's a gamble, isn't it?
It's 14-13 at that stage. Think of that. And you're 62nd, 63rd minute. You just conceded a couple of minutes beforehand. And right from the kickoff, I'm thinking, right, consolidate here for a few minutes. Hold on to possession. Maybe get a penalty. You know, go back in front if you can and everything will be fine. But they get a sniff, and they were brilliant now at that, to be fair. And I think, like a lot of people are saying, and I agree, it was a poor performance from New Zealand. It was a poor game to watch. And we thought, probably from an Irish perspective, that they're doing actually really well here for a team that hasn't played for a while. They're limiting and causing New Zealand to make mistakes. But yeah, I think that if all four tries, and then you could have a fifth one right in stoppage time, it's a forward pass. The last 12 minutes of the game, Ger, they had 88% possession. So Ireland are trying to, you think there's going to be a reaction, you know, when it's, we just couldn't get the ball back.
And they had nothing left at that
nothing,
stage.
There was nothing in the tank, and that's 100% fatigue, mental fatigue, physical fatigue, and lack of playing, and an ageing squad, and not playing
and
well.
Lions hangover, and
well, I'm interested. It's a very selective choice now, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. 12 months ago, and I was just looking up. I thought it was before, but it was just after half time. Van der Fleer gets the try for Ireland, put them ahead, and I think that's it's the 43rd minute.
12 months ago, just at half time, yeah.
And they don't score again. And I'm just wondering, in this second half,
is it a pattern repeating?
Well, it seems that they, like, and I forget now, I feel like around that time, that wasn't the only time that happened, or during those November games, they had a habit of scoring early and then not scoring much thereafter at all. They didn't score late in games, kind of as that progressed through. I can look through that afterwards, but there definitely was some semblance of that. That's an interesting thing here, for 10 points in the first half and 3 in the second, that it's Does it stand to reason in terms of what you're saying? Like, where would the fatigue come from when New Zealand have arguably had a harder few months building
from
up?
From where Ireland were, Arthur, 2022, 2023, which was incredible high.
Yeah.
As regards, you know, the Grand Slam, winning a second championship series. Well, they won a championship at 24 as well, didn't they? Could have won one in 25 if they'd beaten France, obviously. They won four games. It's never been done before, three championships in a row. But the metrics and the stats show that there's been a decline in the execution, the efficiency, the try scoring. They scored 17 tries in 2025 in the Six Nations. France won the tournament, scoring 30 tries. England scored 25.
Right.
Way down on defenders beaten, meters made, line breaks. So loads of stats there to actually prove and say, well, you're way down in all these situations. They must see that themselves, the coaches. And they must be trying to rectify that. I know there's been a bit of a tweak in the game plan, because what Ireland did in 2022 and 23 was short passing game. And it was more of a cohesive attack over back gaps and wearing teams down, and then just the accuracy under massive pressure and fatigue to be able to keep giving those brilliant passes and execution and scoring, you know, teams not being able to defend against it. If you're the opposition of any international country at the time, how do we stop Ireland? Go after them at source, i.e. scrum, line out, breakdown, and big defensive line speed. I genuinely remember being over in Murrayfield at Ireland were playing Wales in Dublin, and we were over doing Scotland, England in Murrayfield, and you meet loads of different journalists, ex-players. So there's obviously English and Scottish guys, loads of them there. And I remember Ireland had this, they played beforehand in Dublin, maybe at, was it a 2 o'clock kickoff, and we're on at 4 or 4 o'clock or something. So everyone's watching the game and Ireland are pulling rabbits out of hats and they're scoring great tries and yeah. they're battering Wales. And everyone is just, my God. That was 2023. Obviously, we went on the World Cup. It tells its own story. But there was a period of time there that you'd meet people abroad and they'd go, wow, this Irish team is just phenomenal. You know, every player, they're Josh van der Fleer, Doris, you know, Mac Hansen has come into the team. Bundy Hackey's playing brilliant at 10, or in the centres, or Robbie Henshaw. They're just, they've players everywhere. They're big characters. And, you know, that was there for everyone to see. There's been the stats will show you that less tries, less metres made, less defenders beaten, line out problems. You know, so it's difficult, and everyone has kind of those waves where you kind of work on these things. So I'm sure they are trying to work on that. And, you know, the last 20 minutes of the game, you know, we're thinking in studio at 60, you know, before that try, when Jamie Osborne runs that line and he knocks it on and Will Jordan kicks it upfield and Jack Crowley goes back, I think it's Bundy Aki and Josh van der Fleer, if you watch it back. They're that
split second.
Not even a half a second, a quarter of a second, just
it's the big second row, gets yeah, over it.
No, it's Quinn Tupaia, okay. The centre. Okay. Gets in, pulls the ball up, penalty. They kick to the corner.
There's another penalty.
A minute later, yeah, there's yeah. a second penalty. Ireland actually defend them all really well. Then it goes out the back line. Gary Ringrose hits man and ball.
What was that penalty for?
It was a side entry or something in the line out, or right. hitting,
make it was straight away
in the air with the player. So it was a penalty given, so they try and play. Ireland defended well, and then they tap and go and they score. As I said, that's, you know, Ireland didn't panic there. It's 14-13. But I just think for that third try, when, you know, New Zealand got their tails up and felt, wow, we can go here now and we can start playing. And they are the most dangerous side to do that in the world when they have to. When they're desperate, but they got that bit of confidence up, and then, as I said, Barrett, McKenzie, they picked that little pocket, but Gary Ringrose came out of the line, and, you know, it's hard, and it's not right to kind of, it's the wrong call. He'll know that himself, and James Lowe is kind of out of the line, so they picked that McKenzie goes through, Wallace Atiti, who was outstanding, by the way, when he came on. And then that's it. Their tails are up and they're kicking on, like, they're kicking on.
Great picture of the three of them in broad daylight running over that. But that's the Wallace Atiti try there.
That's the one that was...
no one near them.
But that's the one that was cancelled, wasn't out. Yeah, that was the last one, I think, because that's Fainga Nuku in the end. That was a forward pass, I think. Okay. But yeah, it kind of sums it up in the end. But it's mad, Ger, if you look at the... Like, I know we have to say sometimes stats can lie a little bit, particularly in football. If you go a goal or two up or get a corner and you're 1-0 up in a soccer game, you can defend for the rest of the game.
Happily,
and you can frustrate the opposition. They can have 75% possession, more shots on target, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes you see rugby games as well that opposition have more possession and the winning team have scored 3 or 4 tries and they've had 35-40% possession. So, but the stats are so funny here. Sometimes they do tell a story. And the one I always talk about, the way the game has gone, because rugby has gone at times bland. You can get some games. It's a bit of a worrying scenario that defences are very strong. We've mentioned that a lot before. And then you get, of course, you get some brilliant games. The TMO stuff is going on forever. That's frustrating people a lot. But if you go to Ireland, New Zealand, last year, November, Ireland 13, New Zealand 23. This year, Ireland 13, New Zealand 26. Would it have been harsh on Ireland in the end if they got a fifth try and it went to, you know, 33?
I'm not
13?
Sure. Like,
were they 20 points better team?
In the last
20 minutes, they probably were.
That's it. And you got to keep playing.
For 60 minutes, Ireland did a lot of good stuff there.
The New Zealand media are saying the rivalry is over because they keep beating us and it's getting, the margin of victory is getting bigger and bigger.
Well, what I was funny looking at it.
But I still think they're close. Like, these are close games. I was involved in New Zealand tours and teams before where you'd be like, this could be 40 points, 50 points if you're
60-ish.
Not right. Yeah, well, it was 160. I wasn't.
260s I'd forgotten about, actually.
But, you know, I think there is the rivalry already. Who knows? Well, if they keep winning, yeah, it changes the narrative in it and it takes that little bit of bite out of it.
Yeah.
But look, just in these stats, pity we don't have a graphic, but it's funny. Last year, 10 scrums. This year, 10 scrums. 75% last year, Ireland had winning their scrums. It was 100% the other night. They had a penalty in the end, penalising the scrum by the referee. But the line-out is the one I've kind of been talking a little bit about. Last year, 70% return. This year, 69% return.
Off more, yeah.
Yeah, 16 line-outs last year. It was only 10 last year. The 10 they'd won. And that's an area of 5 clean line-outs. I always kind of harp on about it, but if you can imagine, you win 2 of that 5 that you lost and you score 2 tries off them, or you end up putting yourself in a position to get a penalty and or 2 penalties off it, it can have such a difference. 122 passes this year, 124 last year that Ireland had in the game. Ball carriers last year, 85 by Ireland. Ball carriers the other night, 86.
Right, so honestly, I was looking at
the stats going, they're so alike. The post-contact meters, which shows your ability to get over again. And Ireland did quite well in the first half with that. They had 157 post-contact meters in Chicago the other night. And they had 180 last year. So they actually had more efficiency in that area last year than this game. New Zealand had 320 meters, post-contact meters. Most of them came in the last 20 minutes the other night. And last year was 317. I could go on and on.
Is part of their ability in the final 20 minutes that their bench is way stronger than ours? That as the game wears on, it's the power of your 23 versus the power of your 15. And that's, we didn't get the impact on our bench.
Yeah, well, they're always going to have explosive athletes in a sense of now, I looked at the bench and I thought Ireland, that's a decent bench for Ireland and they'll need him. Samisoni Takeaho, the sub hooker. Takeaho, I had to do the phonetic kind of spelling of that and pronunciation in 2022. Rua Tapoki helped me. and he was saying Tau K Aho, and we were writing them, I'm spelling it like that, and he was doing all them. He comes off the bench, power, explosiveness. Tamati Williams, again, same thing. He gets a try. All these guys playing rugby, championship rugby as well, and they're powerful athletes, different kind of profile. But then you've Ronan Kelleher, Paddy McCarthy, Beelum. Paddy McCarthy did well and looked fine out there.
He's ready for it, isn't he?
Kelleher and Beelum are both on a Lions tour. Henderson, Doris, you think that's five decent forwards there. You think Ireland would be okay here pre-game, but big call for Doris, you know, to come on and be really, really prominent, given he's been out for a while. He had some very good moments and a couple of good carries. I thought Ian Henderson didn't have a big impact at all, and he's on a long time earlier.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
What about the red card? Andy Farrell was pissed off, but was kind of circumspect in the use of language.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to go back to the bench, then if you start naming them, Wallace Setiti, phenomenal. He's an incredible player. Ratima, Fainga, Nuku, and then Damian McKenzie. So their bench made a bigger difference in Ireland's. Way better. Going on to the red card, I thought it was a very, very harsh red card. Not a red card for me. I've genuinely been strong on this stuff over the years.
No, totally, yeah.
To be fair, now I'm not kind of going the green Irish bias here. He is. So the TMO here is continuously watching this in slow motion and playing this in slow motion. Because we saw that. There's no real. In real time, people are saying, well, why didn't he have his hands up? Because he's not expecting to make a tackle. And Beauden Barrett is speaking after the game saying that he's not expecting the ball at all. So he puts his hands like that to kind of protect himself. It's a coming together of bodies. He said Dan Jones and the referee, obviously he's getting this from the... When he decided it's a red card and he called in the two captains, high degree of danger, he said. That's completely wrong. It wasn't a high degree of danger. The high degree of danger is based on force and the result. I think, of course, Beauden Barrett. Why doesn't he go off for a HIA if he's not injured there? He sits down because he knows there's contact made and he knows it's going to be picked up. And that's fine. There's no problem with that.
You'd want your team doing that.
He's right to do that. Like you want to get the penalty or possibly somebody being sanctioned for it, but. He was very honest and when he came out afterwards. So, no, I don't think it's a red card. I don't think it's the 20-minute red card actually, and I wasn't a great fan of it at the start, but I think the reason I was kind of accepting of it, and the more I thought about it, because it doesn't ruin the game in a sense. If he's gone for the whole game, that's really, really negative. And it goes back to the Sam Kane one in the World Cup final, which is, it's harsh, really, to be honest. It is very harsh in Sam Kane in that World Cup final against South Africa. And that's where it's come from originally. And there's obviously been plenty of them in Super Rugby where, you know, players are sent off early. And I've no issue with what's happened. The reason I was more accepting of it is because I always think you've got to keep, the referee can still issue the red card, straight red card, and that's not the 20-minute one. So I said, I was all for trying it then. It benefited Ireland the other night because if he's gone for the rest of that game for 77 minutes,
it's a very different game.
It's a very different game with 14 men against New Zealand. Even though Ireland did really well for that 20 minutes,
they
managed it well. So, but to be honest, I think... you know, Sam Warburton said in TNT, it's no more than a penalty.
Yeah.
I've seen some people, ex-rugby players, saying, well, letter of the law. I've probably used that term myself, letter of the law. And
yeah.
Letter of the law, it's a shoulder in contact. But
and there was one angle from the
one
far
thing
side.
I've been consistent myself is that last surge forward from the shoulder and the tackling player, and there was none of that. He puts his arms like that. He's absolutely not expecting the ball. It's a forward pass, and but he still has a duty of care. But he's not expecting to make a tackle in any way whatsoever. It's two players coming together. He's 6 foot four, 5 or 6. The other player is a height difference.
Well, do you think they're going to punish him for one game? Because of
I doubt very much that they will not punish him, because if they don't punish him and give him a suspension, what are they saying? Well,
but one game is everybody is happy.
Foul
with that.
Play, yeah. The TMO foul play adjudicator got it wrong.
Yeah.
Which he was wrong. It wasn't. It wasn't a high degree of danger. There wasn't force in it. There wasn't a player following through. There wasn't a swinging arm, whatever. And both players are completely upright because neither player expects to get the ball.
Yeah. Okay, we will come back to...
If you play it in real time, that's my point. So when the referee goes over, it's all slow motion. Play it in real time and you can see it's two players bumping together. He sits down on his backside. There's nothing wrong with Bowden Barrett. He carries on.
We're going to come back to this in about 15 minutes. But
well, after all that nuance, it's you got to reduce it now to where it goes.
Oh, are
Ireland green, red, or somewhere in between?
They're in the red.
In the red?
One last one. Them boots were so distracting. Maybe they were there to take away from the whole amateur occasion of the night. You were complaining about the boots as well.
Boots were mad.
Noticeable.
Yeah, there was loads of players on both teams. Those neon Adidas boots. I think they're Adidas. But at one stage, because the pitch was terrible. It looked terrible. I thought the whole thing looked, the actual from there, nothing to do with the TV coverage, but it just looked amateurish, the whole thing. And the issue with the TMO at the start for that Burn incident, and the players weren't able, it seems, to hear the whistle at certain points. I don't know what that was, what kind of acoustics issue that was, but the whole thing just felt, it wasn't a pleasing thing to watch, I found.
So, red all round.
Yeah, that was just it was just an observation. The pitch
that
was terrible.
PA
but I understand
system,
that,
was, man, that was shambolic. It's
didn't really meet the
should not happen. You know, it's an outside company puts on the event here, goes to New Zealand Rugby Union and the RFU and say, well, we'll pay you X amount of money. Come to Chicago again. You'll make money. We'll make money.
Everybody's
ran
happy.
A good show.
Yeah,
but that's like going down booking a theatre here in Dublin or and anywhere in the country and saying, "And well, we're going to have a show on Saturday night. Everybody come and pay your money and the sound system is not working. People walk out. It shouldn't not happen. The communication with referees, people want to hear that. And I think that's a great initiative and thing that's happened out World Rugby where the referee can give his decision, whether, you know, and talk to the crowd, yeah. They can hear it. You're part of it. You know what's going on. You're not.
It's
going,
not. It's not a better experience at home.
But people in Chicago the other night for both sides had no clue of when the referee Brosseau made the decision about the red card. They didn't hear any of his that information. Him not being able to see the big screen as well. How that can happen?
Yeah.
Surely they're doing sound checks here and
you'd expect so. Anyway, we will come back to it because we've got 5 minutes left in this. What's next?
Oh, yeah, we'll have a few minutes left. But it's the Bohemians. It's a great picture from Sportsfile. Just a number of players were crowded around their phones looking at the Shelburne-St. Pat's game, which obviously Bose had a vested interest in.
They did. I was in a pub.
Fourth.
I was in a pub where there was lots of Bose fans cheering on Shelburne.
Yeah. So it all worked out in the end.
It did.
Bose got their fourth spot and it all just dependent now on the FAI Cup final. And they'll be hoping for Shamrock Rovers to do a double.
Alan Reynolds here speaking with Steve.
And then we have a great clip from Alan Reynolds, yeah.
There were some Bose supporters maybe unhappy that contract extension was signed a couple of months ago. Do you kind of feel a bit vindicated now? Or?
Nah, do you know what? Mentally I'm strong and I know, see, that stuff doesn't bother me. I trust him, what I'm doing. I trust with Stevie O'Donnell and Derek. Where we're going with this. We finished eight last year, we're fourth now. We know what we need and I don't listen to the outside noise, you know, whether it's good or bad. There hasn't been loads of good, but I don't listen to the rubbish, because you're never pleasing everyone. Some of the stuff that's going on is ridiculous. It's absolutely, you know, from the get-go, they're on the players' back. That's possibly because of me. I'm not going to win them all over, and to be honest, I don't give a if I win them all over. All I want to do is be successful here and get ready for next year.
12 points better off than last season as well, so that says a lot.
Sorry for cursing there. Yeah, yeah, so 12 points, yeah, but looks a big difference in where we finish in the league.
Thanks, Alan.
Sorry about that.
Sorry for
passionate her. Game.
That's all right.
Passionate.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair play to him.
So that's great. It'd be a great season for them. A great result now if Shamrock Rovers go on and win and they get into Europe. It's kind of the holy grail at the minute. Like, it's what I suppose the best to aim for. And on that note, Bo's obviously right into the green.
Yeah, straight away.
And at the other end, Stephen Kenny's St. Patrick's Athletic, who I think sort of finished fifth. I think it's probably harsh in terms to be too sweeping a judgment, but I'd say based on the pre-season expectations, it's been disastrous.
Well, we thought they were going to be title contenders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Kenny afterwards was devastated, saying this is the first time we've been manager for a full season and not qualified for Europe.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. So there you go.
He said he was lulled into a false sense of security. They won all the games at the end of last season to get into Europe,
yeah,
out of nowhere, really. And he was like, oh, this playing staff, I have the right team. So I think I'd be interested to see what they do in terms of the transfer market. And yeah, I think they're not going to make any stupid or rash decisions, I think.
No, they've bet the house on him. He's they've backed him as their guy.
And he'll come back, but they're in the red.
Yeah, 100%. Bad into the season to them, and compounded by that kind of cup semi-final defeat too.
Yeah, because they could be looking forward to
it. It was in their own hands. It was in their own hands the whole way through.
And they'd feel pretty good about life if they're playing Rovers. Yeah,
100%. So shocking for them. I believe up next.
I wouldn't write off Cork in that cup final just yet, by the way. I think that there's one last twist in the tale. Rovers form is
could
not good.
Could be, yeah. There could be.
And there'll be a massive Cork crowd. It's like,
yeah, they've not had too much joy in Dublin in the last 12 months, have they?
No, but
finals.
One-off game. Liverpool are in the red. No, they're not. They're in the green.
No, they're green.
They're back, baby.
They're back. We have talked a little bit about it, obviously, with Virgil van Dijk's comments.
Straightforward. If you're Liverpool, the get right fixture you want Villa on your list is Villa.
They'll turn up to
They always.
Belly's tickled and go home again. Yeah, it was kind of nailed on. Now, I'd be honest, I didn't get to see the full thing, obviously, because
Jesus, I don't know. Was it nailed on?
I've been flippant, but I suppose it's just Villa have a horrible record there. Even at their best a few years ago, that initial burst.
You watched that when they're the rugby, Gerard. You two TVs.
The dual screening, yeah.
You're like the old Villa.
But
the scores hit the post a couple
early
times,
on. They needed, and that's what they needed. I think a little bit like Ireland and New Zealand, two very fragile teams. Whoever actually ends up doing something first, I don't know. Did you see it? It was like Salah's goal, brilliant finish, obviously, but like
terrible mistake.
Oh my God! Sammy Martinez now sent off against Man United at Old Trafford at the end of the season last year, and then just when they really needed to kick on. To get themselves back into that whole European conversation. Even a draw last night for Villa would have been great. Or it's on Saturday, but anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, but look, it's a great result for Liverpool. All things being serious, they needed it. And now they've Real Madrid and then City. And that City game,
it's a handy week, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, is that City game in Manchester? They both played at home this weekend, so I don't know what the thing is. But that's massive. That's massive, and it'll be massive. I mean, Arsenal will be hoping for a draw.
Man City versus Liverpool is next Sunday at 4:30 in Manchester.
Right. Live. So that's huge. That's a huge game already.
Yeah.
And it does kind of feel if one of them were to lose that, you're not, nothing's terminal yet, but like all of a sudden you're probably 9 points off Arsenal, assuming they keep doing what they're doing. And that's tough to surmount.
Arsenal are away at Sunderland.
Yeah.
Away at Burnley.
Yeah. But they bet Burnley over the weekend.
Sorry.
They
that's
won
it. Yeah,
weekend, yeah.
So they're away at Sunderland next. So those fixtures were the opposite direction there.
But they're
and
still
then Spurs.
I mean,
immediately after the international break.
They're not even on it because they're not even on our performance rankings this week. It's become so formulaic almost. They're a juggernaut. Like, it's just they're absolutely battering teams and conceding
nothing
next to no chances.
Yeah.
Like, what was David Raya described as a very well paid spectator? Like, he's having nothing to do. It's remarkable. It'll be remarkable to see how long they can keep it up. But it's almost a little bit like Liverpool last season, insofar as you'd wonder now if they can just build up a lead that's so strong that it's hard.
Performances are more dominant than games that Liverpool won last year.
They're killing teams. Like they're absolute pressures.
And as you say, not giving up chances. Yeah,
wow, they look incredible.
Complete side now.
From one juggernaut to something slightly more unpredictable. It's Man United up next. Not a bad result. 2-2 away to Nottingham Forest. I did see all this. Fine first half, pretty 50-50. It's a good goal, kind of fortunate. Casemiro shouldn't probably have had the corner.
I think it was a corner.
Yeah, well, like it sort of was some debate, whatever it was. I don't think it was too outrageous. And that it did go the other way in the second half. Forest got a corner they shouldn't have gotten. And then come out in the second half and collapse. Momentarily collapse, like 2-3 minutes, just the same goal, more or less scored twice, down the same wing. Dallow's an extremely ordinary kind of player. He's a very, very limited fella. And he just kind of, well, I mean, the second goal, he's literally turned around in the box to look at it as it happens in front of him. It's crazy.
That's what you want.
So there's kind of...
another well-paid spectator.
Yeah. No, he tries. He's a tryer, and he does... he loves it, but he's fierce limited for what they need. But they rallied, and Amad Diallo scored a great goal. Great goal to level it up, which...
And nearly got a winner in the 95th minute.
Nearly got a winner, yeah. Set off the line. And look, it's almost the opposite. Liverpool, like when the narrative is kind of positive, you kind of look at it and you kind of go like, oh, geez, that's great, salvage
when
a draw.
When you were getting a draw away from home, I think overall...
It's not
when,
bad.
When they start, no, it's not.
It's not bad.
Should there have been a penalty for the handball with Ahmed clearing the ball?
Oh, jeez.
Could easily have been a penalty.
He gets caught with that a few times.
Yeah.
But, look.
I think overall they would have loved to have obviously get a result. And the way Forrest had started the season, you think a bit more vulnerable, but Sean Dyche, has he changed much with them, do you think? They look different. I didn't see it again.
They look confident. They look kind of, they're definitely, you'd be kind of, I'd be lying if now, I haven't watched enough to kind of go through the nuances of the difference in their playing, but
everybody seems to know what their job is.
Yeah, they're confident. And that's just something that kind of, they never really got rattled. Even the two goals they conceded was probably more of a quality thing than anything else. But like, I'd say they're both probably overall happy enough. But it's interesting now. Man United play Spurs next weekend.
Is that 7 points for United in the last three games? Yeah. Seven points in three games.
I was thinking about this and they've scored, that's 8 goals in the last three games.
A month ago, he was Amram out. Sacking.
Yeah, well, I thought he was gone.
Turned around.
He's back. He's going to get the whole season now.
It's interesting. Like, it's interesting in terms of...
Your man's not getting his haircut, though, anytime soon.
No. But, like, I saw Jason Wilcox was speaking in the week as well about... It was a very kind of public acknowledgement of the fact that we will be spending in January. So, like, I think they see that there's probably an opportunity to kick on. And if they get into... It's no more than the thing with League of Ireland.
Type of players they've signed.
Yeah.
Dreadful players in the last... 3, 4, 5, 6 years.
But the last window was good.
Some okay.
They seem to be rectifying that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was the best window for them, really.
And that's the first time they've had this new transfer structure in place. So that's their... And
it is.
Not all bad players, but the money they paid for some of the players who didn't give any sort of return.
Yeah.
They lost a lot of money on them.
A list of busts.
Yeah, I know it's a mess.
They're in the amber.
Amber. They go to Spurs. Like, the fact of the matter is, if they go to Spurs next weekend, on Saturday, lunchtime... And I think even if they were to leave there with a point and you kind of go 8 points from those out of 12 from those four games, I think anyone sensible would have taken that beforehand and gone, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
And because I think things can only get easier. I'm not sure what their fixtures are, but things can only be getting a bit easier. So look, and again, they'll be interesting. They're going to lose in Buemo, obviously, and Ahmad in the January for the African Cup of Nations. So that'll really test them because they've no real natural... replacements there.
They've got Spurs away, Everton at home, Palace away, West Ham at home, Wolves away, Bournemouth at home between now and the middle of December. So it's
so they're all winnable games, even though like there's obviously Bournemouth are a good deal better than Man United. But anyway, upwards, onwards, and upwards. You know, we'll put them in the amber. High expectations. I believe after this we have Martin O'Neill.
We can watch
Martin O'Neill. Yeah, we have a video here of Martin O'Neill. There's nothing. It's not too revelatory, but he was in a confident mood. Let's say after they beat Rangers 3-1 in the Scottish League Cup final.
Do you expect to still be here come the final, Martin?
I don't even know when the final is.
December the 14th.
December 14th. I would imagine, on a serious note, I would imagine there's a fortnight break now, next week, at the end of the next week, and I would actually think the club would probably be making inroads into getting someone in.
I know you've been joking about it, but would you like to be here longer? Like, is it even a consideration for you to be here as a full-time basis?
Maybe ask me that tomorrow. Today, no.
You really suit that tracksuit, though. You enjoying this, the Adidas? Yeah.
They have the other tracksuit had these really tight like nylon-y tight things. Are very quick. I looked like Robin Hood, to tell you the truth. You know, I didn't know. I like the wider ones, believe it or not, and I feel more comfortable in them. But no, it's on a serious note. Lovely to win, and in many aspects, yeah, it was great. It brought me back to the old days.
He should ride off into the sunset, really, shouldn't he?
Hang about, win the cup.
Yeah.
But it's gone great. I mean, it's lad. I know we're focused on him because he's obviously the big story. But great weekend for Johnny Kenny. Sligo's own Johnny Kenny.
Yep.
Amazing. Scored the opener for Celtic. Great header.
It was a great header.
And goals in two games. Like, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just you come in and it's so funny. Like, isn't it? Like, it's just a different manager comes in, obviously has seen something, trusts him, throws him in, and all of a sudden your career. You know, you'll be looking ahead now. Evan Ferguson's out for November, obviously, more or less. So you're like, does Johnny Kenny, he's not going to come in, whatever, start for Ireland, but you're probably maybe get another look in the squad again.
Well,
you know,
definitely be in the squad, and he's probably a bench option as we're chasing the game against Portugal.
Yeah.
You're throwing everybody on last 10 minutes.
It's amazing just the sort of serendipity and a bit of luck, and it's just all of a sudden your career can take on a whole different.
The sending off in that game yesterday was.
Yeah. Yeah, God. Yeah. Like, I think the funny thing is, like, the result really is all that'll kind of come out of it, but the context of it is like it took an awful lot for him to beat 10 men.
Yeah,
Rangers, like, you know,
Rangers, you know, so that kind of tells its own story.
It's not.
You would expect him to kick on
right off into the sunset.
You would expect him to kick on and win a bit more comfortably, but it wasn't.
3-1 looks good.
I thought the penalty was harsh. Players dive and hits off. He tucks in his arm. But they get back into the game, Rangers, 1-1, and it's nervy. They go win it in extra time.
That's it. And that's, I mean, it's a very different complexion if they've lost that game in those circumstances. The guy's getting hounded out of there. But I like seeing people happy. I like seeing people kind of.
He was very happy.
He's enjoying it.
It's working out.
It's good. Well, okay, we're against the clock here. So it's Celtic in the green. I think the next up we have Senan Kilbride. Up till recently playing Masters football. Comes back with St. Bridget's, wins the Roscommon title. We do have a video, we'll save it for Tommy. He'll be coming in. Tommy was at the game. So massive for them, great story. And at the end of the club championships, throw up these kind of things all the time. And to be fair to Tommy, he's been going all over the place on these Sundays, kind of going and catch them out. So he has some great, great, great footage from that game. We'll see it shortly after 9 o'clock.
If Fionnuala McCormack was a footballer, she'd be eligible for Masters football.
41, winning 10th place finish in the New York City Marathon. Amazing accomplishment. I mean, it's just
phenomenal.
Like, it's outrageous. Like
it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
basically 6 weeks on from finishing 9th in the world's. In Tokyo, it's incredible. Yeah,
and in a better time.
Been to New York at Halloween, and it's incredible because it is one of those cities that does totally embrace the marathon, and the whole city is closed down for it, and everybody comes out and watches it, and it's class. It's like it's always class.
So it's huge. I think I saw Regine Caldeni's piece, the fifth best time of her career as well. So it's such a strange dynamic. We're just not used to sports people, I suppose, at that stage in life to be kind of still pushing the boundaries. It's amazing for her. So definite green as well. And then your friend, County Down and Live Zone, Tom McKibben, wins the Hong Kong Open. Hong Kong Open? Hong Kong Open.
Yeah.
And I suppose more importantly, probably guarantees a spot in the Masters and Open next year.
Yeah, because the Hong Kong Open is one of those Opens that they've decided as a national Open, you automatically qualify for the Open. And also now the Masters shot a 60.
And he spoke about that afterwards, didn't he? What's that's going to be like?
Driving down Magnolia Lane for the first time.
Yeah.
Shot a 60 on the opening day, a wire-to-wire victory, 63 in the final day, breaking all sorts of records. So this might be the start of McKibben. And maybe has made all his money on Live now and he comes back to the PGA Tour. There's that kind of, we're in that weird situation where they haven't sorted out what's going to happen. Everybody wishes they were back on the PGA Tour, but it's hard to turn down the Saudi millions. And
I suppose it is. Yeah, it's people want the best of both worlds. But fair play to him. I suppose he'll be happy enough.
Win for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing for him.
Seven shots he won it by.
I think from the get go, from Thursday through to Sunday, or whatever it was. It's incredible, really. It's incredible. And a green, another Irish face at the Masters next year.
There you go. He's in the green.
That's the performance ranks.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.